Good afternoon and welcome to Saturday with Cormac O'Hara, an historic Saturday sitting in Westminster to debate another Brexit withdrawal agreement. The debate is ongoing in the Commons. We'll parse it all with our panel here, and we'll have contributions from the People's Vote March in London and from other players in this scenario. 51551, if you want to get in contact with the programme throughout the next hour or so. Well, it all started, it kicked off in Westminster at 9:30 this morning with calls from the Prime Minister Boris Johnson for Parliament to finally get behind the deal.
A deal that can heal the rift in British politics, unite the warring instincts in us all. And now is the time for this great House of Commons to come together and bring the country together today. As I believe, people at home are hoping and expecting. With a new way forward and a new and better deal, both for Britain and for our friends in the EU.
He said there is no more room to manoeuvre to get a better deal from Brussels, and that it was a good deal for all of the UK, and that included Northern Ireland.
And it is precisely to ensure that those arrangements are acceptable to the people of Northern Ireland that we have made consent a fundamental element of this new deal. So no arrangements can be imposed on Northern Ireland if they do not work for Northern Ireland. The people of Northern Ireland will have the right, under this agreement, to express or withhold their consent to these provisions by means of a majority vote in their assembly 4 years after the end of the transition.
But unlike the rugby, this was a game of two halves. The opposition rounded on the Prime Minister, starting with Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn.
He has renegotiated the withdrawal agreement and made it even worse. He's renegotiated the political declaration and made that even worse. We're having a debate today on a text for which there is no economic impact assessment and no accompanying legal advice.
He also said some Tory MPs were publicly supporting the deal while plotting a no-deal crash out in 2020.
Like the one yesterday who rather let the cat out of the bag, saying members should back this deal as it means we can leave with no deal by 2020. Yeah. The cat has truly got out of the bag.
Well, the cat is in the sack, maybe. Was the UK being divided? Was unionism being shafted? Step forward Nigel Dodds of the DUP.
This deal puts Northern Ireland, yes, in the UK customs union, but applies de facto all the European customs union code. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Read the detail. It also puts us in the VAT regime.
Yes.
It also puts us in the single market regime for a large part of goods and agri-food,
yes,
without any consent up front, contrary to the agreement made in December 2017, which said that only regulatory difference could happen with the consent of the executive and the assembly. It drives a coach and horses through the Belfast Agreement by altering the cross-community consent mechanism. It was once said that no British Prime Minister could ever agree to such terms.
In all frankness, I do think it a pity that it is thought necessary for one side or the other in the debate in Northern Ireland to have a veto on those arrangements. Because after all, the people of this country have taken a great decision embracing the entire four nations of this country by a simple majority vote that went 52-48, which we are honouring now. And I think that principle should be applied elsewhere. And I see no reason why it should not be applied in Northern Ireland as well. And it is in full compatibility, Mr. Speaker, with the Good Friday Agreement.
Then this morning, out of left field, to bring you right up to date, comes the MP Oliver Letwin. Now, he put forward an amendment which seemed to hold Super Saturday below the waterline. His amendment stated that even if the deal were to be accepted today, there should be an extension until all associated legislation would be passed. In dismay, Number 10 said they'd be sending MPs home early if that were to happen. Increasingly, looking at him today, Boris Johnson looks like a Prime Minister trying to walk his way out of a checkmate. I'll come to the panel here in just a second, but joining me from Westminster is Labour MP for Wakefield, and that's Mary Cray. Mary Cray, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you, Cormac.
The debate is ongoing in the Commons. Thank you very much indeed for stepping out. How do things stand, in your opinion, now? What are we going to get today?
Well, we've just had Theresa May making a speech saying that she's had a distinct sense of deja vu all over again. And she has come in strongly behind the Boris Johnson deal. But what I think her part and speech today shows us is that we spent 3 years with her trying to get her version of what Brexit means through the House of Commons, and then we've literally had 3 days for Boris Johnson to sell his version of Brexit Commons, and he is twisting and turning in the wind. He has promised the hardline European Reform Group a deregulated future, a fast track to getting out on WTO terms at the end of 2020. And yet he's promising my colleagues in the Labour Party environmental and social protections. He can't be telling the truth to both sets. He is lying to one of them, and he is lying to the Labour Party, because this is a fast track to a no deal. So we hope the Let Win amendment will go through. We hope the Prime Minister will pull the vote, and we hope we get a lot more time to look at the detail of what is in the withdrawal agreement.
But no clarity on that yet. I know some of your Labour MP colleagues, maybe even yourself, are wavering, because some say, I wonder in reality, is this the best chance to get this withdrawal agreement done and dusted, especially Labour MPs who may be Remainers themselves but are representing Leave constituencies?
Well, I represent a Leave constituency in Wakefield in the north of England, and the north will be hit first, and it will be hit hardest by this Brexit deal. We have a manufacturing sector, we have a food and farming sector, and we have a big chemicals and financial services sector. And all of those aspects of our economy are telling us loud and clear that this deal will hit jobs, raise prices, and hurt people's well-being in our area. So I've just been in my office looking very at some of the emails that have been sent through from my constituency, and I was on the school gates yesterday with people asking me to vote against it. There is no doubt that for many MPs on all sides, it is a very difficult deal. But we have the legislation in place that forces the Prime Minister to go back and ask the European Union for an extension if he cannot get it through. That is the right way forward for the country. And in the end, the only way this Brexit impasse will be resolved is to put it back to the people. And of course,
but to what end, Mary Cray?
Around,
I mean, that's Labour's position. Forgive me for cutting across you.
Yeah.
To what end? Boris Johnson was very clear in what he said at 9:30 this morning in the House of Commons. He said, I was arguing passionately to bring it back to Brussels and renegotiate. But I can tell you, he says, there is no more room to manoeuvre.
Well, if that is the case, I mean, look, this is the Boris Johnson who told the Queen he wanted to prorogue Parliament for a Queen's speech and then and had two votes to try and call a general election less than a week later. So, you know, he's very good at speaking out of both sides of his mouth, and sometimes simultaneously on the same day. So, you know, this is a man who, of course, knows, and we know from our colleagues in the European Union and, you know, and in Ireland as well, that nobody in any of the European capitals wants to see the UK crash out without a deal. It would be catastrophic, not just for our country, it would be catastrophic for the European Union,
okay,
and particular for yourselves in Ireland. So there is flexibility, there is the ability to look at it. What we need is the ability, the time to put it to a referendum and to have a general election and to sort this thing out once and for all. Nobody wants to keep this thing going for any longer than necessary, but something that started with the people needs to end with the people, and there are hundreds of thousands of them marching through London today, converging on Parliament Square at 2:00 to make their voice heard loud and clear.
Well, Mary Cray, Labour MP for Wakefield, thank you very much indeed, as I say, for stepping out and joining us on the programme. I'll let you back to your parliamentary duties. One of those those people marching among the thousands, as I'm looking on the screen here from central London, is Jonathan Powell. He's former chief of staff for Tony Blair. Jonathan Powell, thank you very, very much indeed for taking the call from the streets, from the People's Vote March in London. Your central demands.
Well, I'm here amongst the crowds, which I must say it's bigger than the last march, so it must be well over a million people, for making it clear that in the end you have to put this back to the people where it started. If you could put David Cameron's deal to stay in the EU to a referendum, then you should be able to put Boris Johnson's deal to get out to a referendum. Doesn't seem very unreasonable to me.
Well, that point was put to Boris Johnson today, and you know his response. He said, well, when do you stop? The people had a vote. The majority voted to leave. Do you go for a third or fourth referendum? Should you not implement the people's majority first, the people's choice in a referendum, before you go to another referendum?
Well, if it was a referendum to say we should go back in, yes, I would certainly agree. But what I'm suggesting is that now we have a deal, people can see what is proposed. There's been much dispute about what actually leaving means. It seems only reasonable to put that back, just as we put the original deal stay in that Cameron put in. So I don't think it's not really a second referendum, because it's not the same question. This one is, do you want this deal or do you not want this deal? That's what we had last time.
You've been writing in the Irish Times, I think, today. You've been writing specifically about the consent element of the Good Friday Agreement. Now, the DUP have said that this deal drives a coach and four through the Good Friday Agreement. And I think you agree with them on the consent part of it. Can you explain to me why?
Yes, I can. And firstly, I should say that I'm very, very glad that the Taoiseach and his team managed to get Boris Johnson to drop his idea of a hard border in Ireland. If they'd put in a hard border between the north and the rest of Ireland, that would have been a tragedy and would have fundamentally undermined the Good Friday Agreement. So I'm very glad that's happened. The trouble is, with Brexit, that you're going to trample on someone's rights. If you don't trample on the rights of nationalists and Republicans, you trample on the rights of unionists. And that's because we've now put a hard border between Northern Ireland and the rest of the United Kingdom. It undermines their identity as British. So they've got a point on that. And on consent, their point is this, that we have this system that we've had really since the negotiations, that you only put big things through if they're agreed by both communities. We have this cross-community agreement. It went back to the idea of sufficient consensus. If you get rid of this for one issue, one big important issue, and have majority voting, then it's not going to be long before the DUP starts saying, well, let's have majority voting for other issues too. And that will undermine the whole basis of power sharing. It'd be much better if they'd stuck to majority voting, but simply put the question the other way around. The question should be, if you want to change the status quo by leaving the customs union, a single market, then you need a cross-community majority. That would be the way to do it, not to actually disrupt the basis of consent.
Yeah, I'll put that point to Jim Wells of the DUP and Michelle O'Neill of Sinn Féin. We'll talk to them later in the programme. Can I just ask you once more about the second referendum before I let you go onto the march? An awful lot of people during debates on television and on radio in the UK, Brexiteers, say their blood is boiling because this hasn't been implemented yet. If there were to be another referendum, and if a majority voted to remain within the European Union, surely you're sowing the seeds of hostility and division further in the UK.
Well, frankly, whatever happens on this division in the United Kingdom is going to remain. We are divided half and half on this issue, and the polls show that. Unfortunately, this genie was let out of the bottle, and I don't think just sort of Boris Johnson getting this through Parliament is going to stop. You know, listen to these millions and millions of people marching past me. They're not suddenly going to go home and say, oh, that's OK then. And I agree there's a problem the other way too. But we have to find some way of actually at least people being able to endorse the deal that's before us, because the vote on leaving was a vote which could have covered a range of things, from Norway staying very, very close to the EU to what Boris Johnson is now proposing, which is a Canada free trade agreement, which will take us a very long way away. It really must be right that people should have a chance to have a say on that. And then we'll have to try and draw a line. But if you draw a line just where Boris Johnson is, him saying putting Theresa May's deal through with a few bells and whistles is good enough, I don't think you'll find him uniting the country.
OK, thank you very much indeed. Jonathan Powell, former chief of staff for Tony Blair, thanks for taking the call from central London. I don't know if there is a million, but there is certainly a huge crowd in central London based on the pictures that I'm seeing just a moment ago. I'll come back to the panel we have here in Dublin and in the Limerick studios, Niall Collins of Fianna Fáil, Richard Boyd Barrett, Solidarity People Before Profit, Neil Richmond is a Fine Gael senator and Shannon spokesperson on European affairs. And we also have Dr. Karen Devine, who's lecturer in EU politics and international relations in Dublin City University. 51551 if you want to get put your stake in. Neil Richmond, let's look at the numbers. The debate is ongoing in the House of Commons. He has to reach the magic 3-2-1 unless the DUP abstains, which is unlikely, it seems. How do you think it's going
to
go?
I think we have to look at two votes now. We have to look at the Letwin amendment and then we have to look to the agreement. Obviously, from following it quite closely this morning, speaking to friends and colleagues who are in Westminster, not many of them are voting for the deal, but they think that there probably is the numbers there to get the deal by a small majority. What isn't clear is what happens with the Letwin amendment. I believe the DUP are in talks with the Prime Minister this morning. So we'll have that vote first. And as you rightly said, if that vote goes through, it seems to be that the Conservatives are going to clap business for the day and come back Monday or Tuesday.
Niall Collins, I'm sure you've been watching it as well as everybody else.
Yep.
Straight up antipathy between the DUP and Boris Johnson this morning. No such things as a semblance of being chums in any way. They were adversarial on this point around consent and what happens to Northern Ireland.
Absolutely. I think the language and the rhetoric from the DUP has been very confrontational, a big remove from their presence recently at the Conservative Party conference. But, you know, literally as we're speaking here on live radio, it is in the melting pot politically. It's been debated in the chamber. It was interesting, yesterday it was being reported that the Financial Times in London conducted a survey of pretty much most of the sitting MPs, and they were calling it marginally in favour of Boris Johnson. But, you know.
But do you think the Letwin amendment, which proposes an extension, even if it is accepted, has changed anything?
That's hard to say from this remove. But look, like we literally just have to sit back now here in Ireland. We have to sit back, we have to observe, and we have to let the UK Parliament get on with making the decision, because we've been at this juncture on a number of occasions before and we've seen how it played out. So we have to wait with the result and try and deal with the result, whether it's for or against, or indeed whether it's an extension, and
take our cue accordingly from that. Sit back we will, but Richard Boy Barrett, I mean, some of the questions being asked today, even this morning, prompt us to question here, is this a good deal even for the Republic, I wonder?
No, it's an absolutely terrible deal. It's worse than Theresa May's deal, but it has one redeeming feature from our point of view, which is that it appears, for now, to prevent a no deal, which is the worst case scenario and which could lead to the restoration of a border, right? So that is one very important, from our point of view, redeeming feature. But in every other regard, this is a terrible, terrible deal.
Doesn't this put the prospect of a hard border back on the table?
It certainly does. I mean, there's big ambiguity. There's big ambiguity about how this simple majority, or the prospect that a Northern Assembly could essentially vote itself out of this deal, and then we'd be back into the possibility of a hard border. I'm not clear, and maybe somebody can clarify for me, how this deal can say there will be a majority, i.e. the DUP don't have a veto, and how that will override the petition of concern in the Good Friday Agreement. I just don't see how that's the case.
So that's down to the Joint Constitutive Committee that will be set up post withdrawal, and that's within the.
But I think there could be potentially legal action there, but you know.
But legal action left, right, and centre. Whereas, and I'll put this to
Karen. If I can just make this point, why is it a bad deal, right? Notwithstanding the one possible redeeming feature that for now it appears to prevent a no deal and a border, is it is a Tory race to the bottom, Boris Johnson exit, which is the worst type of exit, in that it is about him trying to essentially deregulate the British economy, attack standards of labour, environment and so on, and create a sort of British Cayman Islands, which is bad for, as has been described in the British Parliament today, for British workers, for people in Scotland, but it also accelerates that race to the bottom, if you like, across Europe, creates a race to the bottom pressure. So it's a really rotten deal from that point of view. Well, it's going to be a bureaucratic nightmare in the north itself. So it's a terrible deal.
Well, let me put that to Karen Devine. Karen Devine, we had the bulletproof backstop, which was an insurance policy for the north and north-south relations and so on. It's been replaced now with this new dual arrangement. But the more you look at it, it puts, it seems, the prospect of a hard border back in black and white, back on the table here, because if they opt out of the new customs arrangement in the north after 4 years, after a simple majority vote, then they have 2 years to vote or to work out how that complies with the Good Friday Agreement. And if it doesn't, if they don't find a way, then it's a hard border. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't that scary?
I believe that my understanding of this deal is that it's actually Theresa May's deal. The only difference is that Boris Johnson has turned the backstop protocol into a front and centre policy in terms of having a sort of a semi-permanent going forward to putting the border in the Irish Sea. And in that respect, whilst I agree with Richard Boyce Barrett's sort of left-wing analysis of the agreement, it is the same agreement, essentially. And I don't think that it will lead to a hard border. I think this change to the protocol means that you have the regulatory alignment, which is why the DUP is so upset about it. They don't want any kind of seamlessness between Ireland and Northern Ireland, and that's why they're voting against it.
What if they opt out of it after 4 years?
Well, I think that's up to a decision at Stormont.
What if they decide? And anybody in the panel
Do they have a majority for that by the time Stormont, if Stormont is even
let's
back
say they
in
do.
Place?
Let's
because
say they
Stormont
do.
Hasn't been in
let's game this a bit.
Practice for, what, 3 years
yeah,
now?
Yeah, that's totally accepted. They mm-hmm. may come back next Monday for other reasons. But let's say they do vote, or there's a majority to opt out of this after 4 years. Let's game it. What happens then? Anybody?
Well, I think you're jumping to immense conclusions. And I think one thing he says, and you bring back the prospect is the no deal. That's all that was on the table at the moment. The previous withdrawal agreement and the previous iteration of the backstop didn't fly. That didn't go through. It wasn't on the table. So what we have with this one, and in some ways I actually think it's an improvement in terms of the IR-specific provisions. Needless to say, I think Brexit, any Brexit is bad. So that's put that out front and centre.
My point is that we were told the backstop was bulletproof. Mm-hmm. Now, there was a renegotiation, which we were told could not happen. And the result of the renegotiation is what I'm trying to get at
well,
now,
if you
right?
See, if you look
so
at
let's say they opt out after 4 years.
And what, in fairness, the European leaders consistently said is that backstop could be replaced, but it had to be replaced by something that essentially does the same thing, i.e. keeping the border open, protecting the all-island economy and protecting the European single market, which this new measure, it hasn't been given a nickname yet, but I'm sure that'll come, does. And I think what's crucially, if you look at the Northern Ireland and the consent mechanism, and the consent mechanism in the previous iteration probably hadn't gone into the right amount of detail. And talk about the joint committee there, but this one, it does give Northern Ireland a complete say. But the fact that it's a straight majority, as opposed to what Boris Johnson suggested a fortnight ago, allowing it under the current Stormont system, whereby on the current numbers the DUP plus two could pull it down.
But is it a good idea? I wonder too.
The situation. Well, it is a good idea to involve Northern Ireland in its own
decisions.
Pull
threads on the Good Friday Agreement.
It's not pulling
Collins.
Threads in the Good Friday Agreement
That's
because it's respecting it. Well, that's what Jonathan Powell is saying. But also, you have the DUP who've always been against the Good Friday Agreement, saying the most ludicrous things about it in the last 4 years.
Can I put that to Niall Collins? Is it a good idea to mess around, for want of a better term, with the Good Friday Agreement?
Well, look, we're in unique circumstances, and the Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, when he was addressing the media from the European Council during the week, he did describe it as a unique agreement for a unique set of circumstances. And obviously the Good Friday Agreement is sacrosanct. It has played a huge role in promoting peace and prosperity, and we've all worked hard to try and maintain it and promote it as we go along. So, but Brexit has really, you know, it has come up, it has hit us all so hard. And I think we just have to focus on how can we try and deal with this in a cool, calm and collected fashion.
Can I put Jonathan Powell's point to you? If you allow a simple majority on this one, what's stopping the DUP in future situations to say a simple majority on X, Y and Z? You have to accept the precedent, don't you?
Absolutely. He makes a very, very valid point, and he poses the question. And I think that's something that we will have to deal with. But I think we have to build and rebuild trust in our relationship with unionists and with the DUP, because they have felt...
You're talking about a tangential issue now, I think. What you have done, if you accept this, if you accept a simple majority consent principle, you are simply accepting an undermining of the Good Friday Agreement, which was established and negotiated over many years.
I'd have to reject that, Cormac. What this does is, first and foremost, protect the Good Friday Agreement and protect the key issues under Strand 2 of the Good Friday Agreement when it comes to the oil island aspect. When you involve a straight majority in something, let's not forget, the Good Friday Agreement, is absolutely vital to this island. But Brexit in itself poses the biggest existential threat to that agreement.
Correct.
With this part new Irish protocol within the Irish, within the withdrawal agreement, you have that protective measure. Because ultimately, if we hadn't done it, if we had a no deal, you would have had the Good Friday Agreement unravelling to another level altogether. What you have with this, and within the unique circumstances, is the absolute protection. And I think it's very clear if you look at the 4 year plus the 2 year cooling off period is a vital aspect of
it. Tom says 51551, I want to open another one with you, Karen Devine, in just a second. Tom says, where's the backstop gone? Every Fine Gael person chanted it for the past 2 years. Joe in Wexford says, I think the failure of the House of Commons to make a decision one way or another shows that the British unwritten constitution is archaic and unsuited to tackling complex foreign policy problems. And Hilary Benn is on his feet in the House of Commons. Karen Devine, can I ask you about the checks, the customs and regulatory checks? No checks from GB to NI, says Boris Johnson this morning, or the other way around. Let me talk about chlorinated chicken. If they do a free trade deal with the US, the UK in a year or two's time, and they bring in heaps, buckets of chlorinated chicken, what's stopping chlorinated chicken finding its way from Liverpool or Manchester to Belfast to Dundalk?
Well, can I just say, surprisingly, I agree with what Senator Neil Richmond has said, is that I actually don't believe it does impact on the Good Friday Agreement at all. But in respect of chlorinated chicken, which, you know, obviously nobody should be eating chlorinated chicken anyway, but the way it works...
You've got to know, though.
But yes. What's stopping other chlorinated chicken being brought from the North to the Republic? No checks, we're told.
So there will be customs, OK, and that's a fact. So there will have to be customs in Larne, in Belfast. Like, I've been saying this for a long time. I've been saying this for years when everyone was panicking, mass panic about Brexit. Ireland is an island. That's a fact. There are set points of entry for goods and for people onto this island,
whether it's air or sea. We were told in the Commons today.
No, that's not the case.
It's not the case.
That is not the case.
If you want to import
a product, you have to fill out your paperwork, okay? Any business will know this. Whether it's under GATT WTO rules or whether it's under the EU customs rules, you have to fill out your paperwork. That's how trade happens.
Boris Johnson said we will only have physical checks in 1%. 1%
of
cases.
But that 1% it will is that the 1% are, well, no, in theory. Now, of course, this is going to be a bureaucratic administrative nightmare, and this is the problem. But in theory, if there's a danger that goods such as chlorinated chicken might end up in the south, they're supposed to be stopped at the Northern Ireland border with the UK. That's in theory what's supposed to happen, right? So there's goods that are suspicious, if you like, or could be of the sort that you're describing. And similarly, goods going into Britain from Ireland that could end up, from Northern Ireland or Britain that could end up in the European Union, again, would be checked on that basis. Although there's also supposed to be some alignment around particular sectors such as agri-food and so on. But
Richard, the regulatory alignment allowed for in this protocol for goods, be the agri-food product or goods, makes that the prospect of checks so limited. But also you're going down to a very level where, one, this protocol has kicked in, two, the UK has negotiated a trade deal and absolutely breached the standards that they say in the future framework that they won't. You're going down to a hypothetical level that possibly 25 years away. I mean, of course we have
on
to.
On behalf of business in Dundalk and the border counties, for
rightly
example.
And that's why this protects the border counties, because if there are checks, they will be at the ports such as Larne or they will be in the UK. The whole island economy is protected within this protocol if it was ever to come into place.
But our market here could be flooded with substandard stuff, couldn't it?
No, it couldn't, because
cheaper,
of this protocol, because of the regulatory alignment maintained between Ireland, North and South, would mean that the division between Great Britain and Northern Ireland would require checks if they go for those substandard basis in a future relationship.
So is he wrong in saying checks in 1% of cases?
Again, he's, as you say, gaming it down to when could that 1% happen in 25 years' time, when the UK breaches a very different trade deal with a very different arrangement and they lower all their standards to a base level. That's where he's got gaming it down to the possibility or the amount of goods, 1%.
But you see, you have to say, Neil, is that Boris Johnson's agenda is to drive down standards, right? I mean, that's what he wants. He does want a race to the bottom deal, and he sees this as a vehicle to do it. And, you know, while I acknowledge that the one redeeming feature of this deal is that for now, at least, notwithstanding the possibility of the Northern Assembly pulling out of this deal, it prevents the hard border and so on. There is no doubt about Boris Johnson's agenda, and it is to ride a coach and horses through environmental, labour, health and safety,
food
standards.
We don't have an influence over that. All we can do is protect ourselves, protect the market, which we do in this agreement, and most importantly, negotiate a future relationship with the UK and the EU that is as strong as possible.
Okay, cripes, look at this. On and on they talk in the House of Commons, and thicker and larger the crowd gets in central London. The People's Vote March is absolutely massive now, if you look at the pictures. We'll be back with more talk about chlorinated chicken and other parts of the agreement after a quick break.
Email saturday@rte.ie. Saturday with Cormac O'Hara on RTE Radio 1.
It's just after 2 p.m. Let me give you a quick look at the headlines. The British House of Commons is debating the latest Brexit deal this afternoon, but there is growing uncertainty about whether or not the decisive vote will be taken today. Meanwhile, protesters calling for a second referendum claim that more than 1 million people have taken to the streets of London. And in other news, Ireland has lost to New Zealand in the Rugby World Cup by a scoreline of 46-14. I'll come back to the panel in just a second, but Jim Wells, DUP MLA for South Down, joins us now on the line. You're very welcome to the programme, Jim.
Good afternoon.
Are you reassured by anything you've heard from the House of Commons, from Boris Johnson this morning, or from your colleagues from the DUP there about no border down the Irish Sea or the constitutional integrity of the North not being impinged at all?
I think by North you mean Northern Ireland.
Correct, yeah.
Right, yes. We are very, very worried about the situation. We're hoping and praying that today, somewhere along the line, Boris Johnson's proposals will be rejected by the House of Commons. We see many, many dangers to the future of Northern Ireland in those proposals, and we see a total lack of consent from the Northern Ireland Assembly to whatever happens. So either hopefully today it will be rejected, or perhaps the least worst option is that a decision will be postponed. And I think if the decision's postponed, people throughout the United Kingdom will realise just how toxic Boris Johnson's agreement was.
Now, when you say postponed, do you mean that the DUP, as is reported in some places, may support the Letwin Amendment, which would force an extension even though the deal would be accepted today?
Well, I think we're going to have to make a very balanced decision here. I think it is quite clear that the numbers are there to reject the proposal in its entirety. Well, then we'll back that. Then the fallback position, because I dare say the backstop, is that we'd vote for Letwin's amendment. I actually was at a wedding this morning, so I haven't been following the intricacies of what's going on in Parliament between rugby and weddings. I think my mind has been somewhat distracted from the service.
So you're at a wedding, Jim, and you weren't witnessing the divorce between the DUP and Boris Johnson in the House of Commons.
Well, I think certainly Boris Johnson has form in this, unfortunately. And he has certainly let Arlene down big time. Yeah. I suppose not entirely unexpected, but the smirk may be on the other side of the face this afternoon if he loses this. And there are encouraging noises coming out of Westminster.
Well, you reject this deal, the DUP. To what end, I wonder? What is the rationale for rejecting this? Because you were lauding Boris Johnson when he was at the DUP conference because he was passionately at the time saying that he would go and renegotiate the deal and do away with the backstop. And there was whooping and hollering from the DUP. Now that he has done it, he says there is no more room. We cannot get any more. And you throw it back in his face.
Well, because obviously what Boris Johnson said in last November at our party conference and what he's saying now are totally different. I mean, no, and as he said at the time, no unionist, no Conservative could or would ever support a deal which creates a border down the middle of the Irish Sea. Would the people of Galway or the people of Donegal tolerate a customs deal whereby you paid customs duty before you brought goods from Leitrim into Donegal? Of course they wouldn't.
Is he a hypocrite?
Well, he clearly has reneged under pressure from your own Prime Minister in a mad dash to get a deal because he didn't want to ask for an extension. What he hasn't done is the arithmetic to see whether he's got the numbers to get that through Westminster, and I hope the force of argument will be such that many Conservatives and a few Labour will realise that voting for this creates a two-tier United Kingdom. It effectively means that we're going to have to pay customs on goods being exported from Scotland and England to Northern Ireland. Now, we can reclaim those if we can prove that the goods weren't subsequently re-exported into the Irish Republic. Would Galway, would Donegal tolerate this?
I don't know if it's comparable, but I'll let you back to the beef or salmon.
It is comparable because we're an integral part of the United Kingdom and Donegal's an integral part of the United Ireland, or sorry, an Irish Republic.
Well, OK, we'll park that one in just a second. I'll let you back to the beef or salmon in just a second, Jim, but one more question for you. Do you accept that there's a deep irony in the DUP position when you're telling the Prime Minister that you need to listen to the people of Northern Ireland? By the same measure, you have been told again and again for the last 3 years you must listen to the people of Northern Ireland, a majority of whom voted to remain.
Yes, but he's not listening to the unionist community of Northern Ireland, and the system that we've had for 21 years says that nothing can happen in Northern Ireland without the consent of both the nationalist people and the unionist people. Now we're not even going to be consulted about going into these arrangements, and going out will not be, there'll be no consultation with unionism. We've had this, we've had to live under this burden of the Good Friday Agreement for 21 years, and we've had to live under what's called cross-community support. And now it's being abandoned because they think it's going to come up with the wrong result.
Jim Wells, DUP MLA for South Down, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Michelle O'Neill is the Vice President of Sinn Féin. She joins us on the line now. What's your reading of what you've been hearing from Jim Wells and the DUP position, Michelle?
Good afternoon, Cormac. Well, I just picked up the very tail end of what Jim says, and Jim's usually quite extreme in all his commentary, but I think what the DUP have done very wrongly, in my opinion, over the course of recent time, has been to try and conflate the issue of consent on the constitutional position, which is written into the Good Friday Agreement, and then the issue of consent in terms of how the Assembly works if it was up and running. So, for me, they have tried to conflate those two things, and they're very separate issues. For example, the issue of consent in the Assembly is about parallel consent, is around particular areas of business. So, for example, whenever you're voting on the budget, so that's not the same as the principle of consent on the constitutional position of whenever 50% plus one of the people on this island decide to unify the country.
So you're saying you can pick and choose when you use the consent mechanisms in the Good Friday Agreement?
No, I'm saying that there's two very different pieces of legislation and information. One is the issue of consent on the constitutional position, and one is on the issue of parallel consent in an assembly. And they are very different things. But ultimately, I mean, Jim and his party are on the wrong side of the Brexit debate and have been from the very outset. They've actively worked against the interests of the best interests of the people who live in the north. We welcome the fact that there has been a deal achieved this week. We're yet to see now how it's going to unfold in Westminster today. But you know, clearly what we wanted to see, and we set an objective at the very start of this process to say that we needed to have the special and unique circumstances that pertain to the north of Ireland reflected in the outcome of Brexit.
Well, I wonder, Michelle O'Neill, if Sinn Féin is going to be hoisted on its own petard on that one, because you have been to the forefront very early on in looking for special status for Northern Ireland. Now, this is what we're told from this agreement is what the north has. You have the best of both worlds. If the economy of the north does very well and foreign direct investment flows in, I wonder, will some nationalists, or even more nationalists in the north, say, what's the point of voting for a united Ireland if we have the best of both worlds in the north?
Well, I wouldn't say that the outcome, even the Brexit deal that has been achieved, it certainly doesn't give you the best of both worlds. It will create challenges, particularly around that east-west trade. So there are challenges that pertain. And also, remember, the deal that's been achieved reflects merely economic issues. It doesn't reflect all the other issues in society. It doesn't reflect the rights issues. It doesn't reflect the social issues, which will be a huge challenge to the people who live in the north of Ireland. So we've always been very clear from the start. We've tried to be pragmatic. We've said that in the first instance, the people did not consent to Brexit. If there is going to be a Brexit, then we argued the case for the special and unique circumstances to be recognised. That was originally in the first agreement, if you remember, when Theresa May achieved the withdrawal agreement. It included the backstop. This agreement includes it replaces the backstop, but it replaces the backstop with a more definitive future relationship.
Yeah.
So I certainly would never argue that it gives people the best of both worlds. But ultimately, for me, as an Irish Republican who believes in the unification of this country, of course I'd say it's incumbent upon me to make the case to those people who live on this island but there's something better for all of us.
Yeah, but in a way, isn't that perverse logic? You're accusing unionists of perverse logic in wanting to maintain the union with the UK no matter what the economic analysis is, and you're putting forward the same argument vis-a-vis a united Ireland, are you not?
I'm not, because I think 21 years ago, the people on the island of Ireland consented to the Good Friday Agreement, and the people on the island of Ireland consented to the principle of consent, that whenever the people decide that the constitutional future will change, then that will be the case. So I'm merely working to the Good Friday Agreement. I'm making the case as an Irish Republican for a united Ireland, because that's what I believe in. But I think more than just aspiration or nice language, I need to be a political leader that's about making the arguments, creating the arguments, actually getting into a conversation. And that's why I think it's so, so important that the Irish government now starts to plan for unity, because it is inevitable that we are going to have a referendum on Irish unity. Now the time to plan for that.
One last one for you, Michelle O'Neill, if you don't mind. I heard Nigel Dodds in the Commons this morning say that the Assembly, Stormont, will come back on Monday. Is that your understanding as well?
No, they're being dishonest with the public. What's going to happen on Monday is that the DUP have tabled a motion which allows the Assembly to be recalled. They're attempting to speak about the issue of abortion on Monday. But no, they're being dishonest to say they can actually do anything about it. I mean, what they're doing is it's done politics. It's about playing to the gallery. It's about walking into the chamber, trying to achieve a debate on women's reproductive rights.
So Sinn Féin won't be there.
But they can't do anything about it. What we've said very clearly, Cormac, is that we don't want to be there to be part of a stunt or a circus. The next time that we all go into the chamber together should be in order to form an assembly and executive, because that's what the people deserve. If, for example, other parties decide to go into the chamber on Monday, then clearly that is going to add to the circus of what the DUP are attempting to do, which is ultimately being dishonest with the public.
OK, Vice President of Sinn Féin, Michelle O'Neill, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Kieran, 51551, says Farage is correct in one regard. No deal is a good deal because there is no exit of the EU that is beneficial to the average UK population. Anna Soubry is on her feet in the House of Commons and on they go marching in central London. Karen Devine, can I ask you, at this stage, if the only difference really in terms of getting the numbers behind this deal is Boris Johnson, personnel and timing?
No, I do think he will get it through. I know I may be in a minority opinion about that, but I think he has enough. And I think the backstory to that is that you can even go far back as when David Cameron resigned and Boris Johnson did not put himself forward for the leadership contest then. In fact, it was narrowed down to two women. And of course, you know, I teach gender and politics as well as the EU, and the glass cliff came to mind there in that Theresa May did all the dirty work, got the deal. And what Boris Johnson is going to do is push through Theresa May's deal, and it's just Boris Johnson's protocol turn from policy. But can I just make a wider point about, you know, you've mentioned the marches there to stop Brexit on that are showing on the television, and you had the Labour MP Mary Cray on saying, you know, people at the school gates and emailing her saying don't pass it. And I want to make three points because this is really important. Comrades did a public opinion survey of all people in the UK in the first week, 2 weeks of October. 26,000 people interviewed. 62%, so two in three people actually want the result of the 2016 referendum to be abided by. Only 32% don't want that. In terms of having a second referendum, right, which is again what the politicians are all talking about, 45% of people oppose a second referendum compared to just 41% who want a second referendum. And 43% of Britons feel that if this deal is passed, they're going to feel a lot more optimistic about their future compared to 33%. But most crucially of all, right, that was the Comrades survey. There was another survey where the fieldwork was done just a couple of days ago on the 17th of October. And again, they had a representative sample of all people in the UK. 40% of people support this compared to just 31% opposing it. And if you look at the breakdown of these results in terms of who voted for who in the 2017 2019 general election in the UK, you'll see 70% of the Conservative voters are in favour of it and only 10% oppose it. So they're not interested in a no deal. They're not interested in a hard Brexit. And I think we have a sort of a Remainer media echo chamber with those marches being shown where the actual, you know, the entire population and specifically those voices that don't tend to get heard in the media Remain echo chamber are actually saying everybody wants this to go through.
Well, there's also a parallel in Irish politics as well. We have been focused, because politicians and the government has been so focused on Brexit in the media. And I wonder, Neil Richmond, if there is any truth to the rumour reported by Reuters last night that senior Fine Gael figures are saying that if this deal is done, go for a general election very, very quickly before Christmas.
Yeah, like this has been all since the meeting between the Taoiseach and the Prime Minister last week in the Wirral. It's been this constant obsession that regardless of what's actually going on, and we're facing literally the biggest issue to face this state, I would argue, since the emergency, everyone's just snapped with concerns about a general election. All I'm focused on, and all I know, all the media at large,
we're reporting that Fine Gael senior sources are saying, by all accounts.
I know anyone who's involved in government and anyone I speak, and I'm obviously a very junior source, are talking about what's really important is the next few days, getting this withdrawal agreement, protecting this island from what would be the most devastating effects of Brexit. And I think...
Well, hang on, because based on the statistics that Karen Devine has given us, based on the UK, you could say the same thing here. An awful lot of people are saying this is taking a lot of the energy, a lot of the focus of government
and money,
and of Dáil away from other issues. What about the 5-year-old homeless boy eating his dinner from a piece of cardboard on the street? Surely we need to focus on other things.
Absolutely. And as soon as Brexit was meant to be finished at the first stage of Brexit on the 29th of March, but you cannot underestimate and you can't belittle how important Brexit is. I know a lot of people are sick of talking about it and you talk about Brexit fatigue, but the impact of a no-deal Brexit would be so stark on this island, socially, economically and everything else, that there's a reason it takes up so much attention.
But should we not, Niall Collins, go, if this is agreed, the withdrawal agreement, should we not go to the people and try and get a mandate for some party or majority or other to get other things done?
Well, look, there's going to be an election at some point in the near future, Cormac. That's a given. And all the political parties prepare between elections on an ongoing basis, selecting candidates, campaigning, different campaigns on the ground. Look, my party, as you know, we have taken a huge decision a number of years ago to enter the confidence and supply to provide, to allow a government to govern Ireland, particularly in the face of the onslaught of Brexit. We did so. It was a difficult decision and we have seen how it has played through. I think we took the responsible decision. We took the right decision.
If there's an agreement quite soon on this withdrawal agreement, should we not go and have a general election?
Yeah, look, it will happen. It'll happen either early in the new year or early before the summer. My own party leader was on with Sean O'Rourke on Friday morning. He was asked the same question. He said, we still have the finance bill to pass, the social welfare bill has to pass following the budget.
So not before Christmas?
Well, I don't see it before Christmas. No, Leinster House was rife with rumour all week that if Boris Johnson wins the day today, that we could be looking at a November election. But I think we just have to allow a period of time for Brexit
want.
To play out, because it is such a huge threat to our economy. If it goes wrong, it's such a huge threat. And we have been saying, the Fianna Fáil party and our various spokespersons have been saying, it's all about getting Ireland prepared. There is no such thing as an upside to Brexit. And what we have at the moment is a harder Brexit on offer than what Theresa May was offering. So we have to prepare our industry, we have to prepare our SMEs, and we have
Richard
to prepare
Boyd-Barrett,
our country.
I have another little bit of news from Westminster in just a second, but your opinion on when there should be a general election in the maelstrom of all of this.
Well, I mean, I think most people here are sick of the Brexit thing, but on the other hand, they also know that a no-deal Brexit would be a disaster, that a border would be a disaster, and that has to be avoided. So I think there is a general agreement that has to be avoided, but I think people are also desperate to move on to address things like the housing crisis, things like, you know, the cost of childcare, the state of the health service. And I mean, certainly we have to have an election soon. I think it might be a bit of a stunt to just call a snap election on the basis we're popular now if a deal is done, kind of thing.
That's what the opinion polls are saying for Fine Gael, a Brexit bounce.
Yes, and I think some within Fine Gael, on a fairly opportunistic basis, whether it reflects the overall position, I don't know, want to just go while they're popular, sort of thing, before any other issues can surface for debate.
I think that's a bit making light of it, Richard. Well, it's not about what's popular, it's what's doing right and what's being sincere and what the government has put the effort into.
Well, I think what would be sincere, if you don't mind me saying it, I think what would be sincere is for us to say, because after the last budget, which was essentially an austerity budget predicated on a possibility of a no deal, is what's actually going to change if we get a deal in terms of giving back what wasn't given in the budget, in the areas of housing, health, improvements to people's income, and so on.
Well, let's get a deal first.
Okay, well, that's what they're trying to do in Westminster. Michael Gove is on his feet. Let me give you a tiny little tidbit of information from the BBC's Laura Koonsberg. She's reporting that number 10 says the chances of no deal increase if the Letwin Amendment passes. Sources say no deal preparation will recommence immediately if that amendment passes. She also quotes advice from the Cabinet Secretary, which says that the legal default is leaving on the 31st and there is no certainty that the EU will grant a delay. Neil Richmond, the chances of a no deal increase if Letwin passes.
Yeah, again, this is where, as Niall was saying earlier, you go into the internal British politics and you have advice from some senior councils, you have advice from different people. Ultimately, Letwin Amendment, let's see what the government does. If it passes, I'm reading now that Nicholas Soames is going to vote for it. That amendment itself could go a vote either way, and I think we just have to sit back and watch.
What's your reading of, if Letwin passes, just to remind people, the amendment says that even if there is a majority for the Boris Johnson deal, This amendment forces an extension beyond October 31st. Now, some people say, Karen Devine, that the more time you have, the more holes you can pick in the Boris Johnson agreement.
There's always attempts to stop Brexit in Westminster. And this is just another example of that. Like I said, I didn't actually finish the point previously that I was going to make, but Boris Johnson is a very shrewd political operator, and this is why I think he has the votes to pass this because as I said, he didn't go for the leadership election and Theresa May won it, and he's been sort of waiting and looking at and sort of waiting to pounce in terms of trying to get that leadership position. And I think that he actually canvassed the ERG members. I think he canvassed Labour Party MPs who voted for Theresa May's deal three times previously. And I think even before he got into the leadership position, that he made sure that he said to them, if I go to Brussels and if I come back with a deal, you're going to have to vote for it. And that's why I think this is different. And also, the difference between this time and Theresa May was that Theresa May was not ever prepared to threaten to throw the DUP under the bus. Boris is. She was always against putting a border in the Irish Sea. Boris has allowed that. And she would never threaten to leave without a deal. And Boris needed to have a no extension agreement from the EU. And he needed to say he was going to leave without a deal just in order to be in a negotiation position to see if he can get this vote through today. And if I read him right, then he's probably done his homework and this is going to go through. I looked at the bookies, it's evens for it to go through.
Well, let's see. I can also tell you that it's being reported now that a man has been arrested for trespass within the Palace of Westminster. I don't know if it has anything to do with Michael Gove being on his feet, but I sincerely doubt it. Let me ask you, Niall Collins, though, in terms of negotiating all of this, Anglo-Irish relations and Unionist Dublin relations, have they been damaged irreparably, I wonder, or damaged significantly at least?
I think, well, there's a couple of points to make. First of all, the Good Friday Agreement, you know, we had a discussion earlier on in relation to consent and the DUP's concerns in relation to the consent part of the latest agreement, which is on the table. And the Good Friday Agreement never really envisaged Brexit, nor did any of us. And so that's why we're grappling with such a big potential economic catastrophe. And I think it's important that all our language and all our rhetoric, that nobody either takes delight or is being seen to take comfort or delight in the DUP's discomfort. My own party leader has, over the last number of months and years, has been pointing out to the government that Anglo-Irish relations, the eye has been taken off the ball in relation to that, and indeed with the unionists. So I think we have to have a redoubling of efforts. We have to keep in mind always that the UK are our nearest neighbour. They're going to be a huge trading partner into the future. And what we have been saying is that we need, you know, when Brexit happens, or if and when Brexit happens, we need to have a formula and an arrangement to keep the dialogue open, both north-south but and east-west. And we've been saying we need something in the model of the Nordic Council, where the Nordic states cooperate with each other and keep in touch with each other and foster better relations.
OK. Well, look, can I ask Richard Boyd Barrett? This is a question from Kevin in Dublin. Could you ask Richard Boyd Barrett, did he campaign for Brexit in the north? And does he and Eamon McCann take responsibility for what happened?
No, first of all, we didn't campaign, nor did we seek a referendum. Nor did we seek a referendum.
But Breed did.
No, she did not.
She's on the ballot paper. She's on the agenda.
You
for
supported
speaking
Brexit,
at the rallies, calling
did
for
you?
A exit.
No, we did not support the calling of a referendum or whatever. In the North itself, our members faced at the time after EU austerity with giving approval to the European Union, couldn't endorse the European Union, right? But we didn't seek a referendum. And our criticisms of the EU continue, right? But we see as a much worse option a Tory Brexit. And of course, the irony is, we're now very possibly going to get a Tory
Brexit. But Brexit's Brexit, Richard.
A Tory race to the bottom Brexit is a very different one, for example, than one where Jeremy Corbyn says he's going to uphold standards, environmental and labour standards, stay in the customs union. That's a very different situation to Boris Johnson and the Tories wanting to drive a coach and
horses. Well, we don't have a Tory Brexit nor any other Brexit at this point. I can tell you, though, that UKIP... I shouldn't laugh, but I'm laughing at the irony of it, not the trauma itself. For Richard Brain, its leader, UKIP's leader, has been suspended, it seems. Stranger this thing gets. Can I tell you, next Saturday, before we finish, we'll be in Castle Blaney in County Monaghan for a special programme focusing on, you've guessed it, the border and Brexit and the impact of Brexit. Whenever Brexit happens, we'll be there as guests of Our Lady Secondary School, which is hosting a conference on the future of the border in partnership with the Communicating Europe initiative. We'll be joined by a wide range of politicians, north and south, as well as some of the leading academics and experts on Brexit, security, economics and history, and ordinary people as well will be giving us their views. And that's next Saturday at 1 p.m. In Monaghan. Now, that'll be on RT News Now and Radio 1. I can tell you that on and on it goes. There's no sign of a vote. There's no sign of a deal. There's no sign of the Letwin deal being passed yet. We leave you in uncertainty, I think. A couple of texts from our listeners. David in Dublin says, Boris left the DUP out of the agreement deliberately to screw up the whole deal. The Tories want out, 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 no deal. This was on the cards. You cannot trust the Tory party, says David in Dublin. David, you have the last word. Mubir Hassan, Niall Collins, Richard Boyd Barrett, Neil Richmond, Dr. Karen Devine, and all of our contributors. Keep an eye out. I wonder, has Super Saturday turned into a Pygmy Saturday? We'll see. More next Saturday at 1 p.m. Bye-bye.
On Saturday with Cormac O'Hara was produced by Tom Donnelly. The broadcast coordinator was David Phelan. Research was by A.B. Philbin-Bowman. And sound was by Cara O'Hare and Andrew Kane.